Dan bersama kita untuk melihat kepada sentimen di pasaran Asia dan juga global adalah Stephen Innes, Ketua Pagar Strategi Pasaran Global di Axie Trade. Stephen, first of all, congratulations on your new role as the Chief Global Market Strategist. Astro Awani wishes you lots of success and happiness in your new role. But let's look at the Asian market for today. Stock markets or markets around Asia are celebrating the President Trump's reopening plan and also the expected production continuation by Boeing. What are some of the other factors coming out of the US that could possibly affect the markets in Asia for today?
Well, you know, I think this is providing a perfect lead-in because we've got the Chinese GDP coming out later this morning in a few minutes, actually, that could provide a stark reality to you know, how deep this economic downturn has run in Asia. And could actually wobble sentiment. However, I'm of the view here, and we'll soon find out if this view is correct or not, that even if a bad number comes out, there's sufficient monetary policy and fiscal stimulus thrown at the China market to sort of paper over the economic cracks. Look, I still think the markets are ultimately going to make a pivot to the real economy as we move forward into as markets reopen around the world. However, over the short term, I think the policy stimulus that the central banks and the governments have offered up will buttress the economies over the short term.
And Reuters projected the Chinese economy to grow or to contract by 6.5% the first quarter of this year. Do you have any numbers that you can share with us before the official number is revealed by China?
Yeah, I'm more looking a little bit deeper. So, look, we have to remember the reliability of the metrics that we're looking at to build into this number are quite varied, so we're going to have a really broad spectrum of guesses, really what it boils down to. And this is sort of hampering decision-making processes also. I'm looking more towards 7.5 to 8% decline. But, you know, the again, you know, it's bad data getting put in. Therefore, the models that we're working with are not very reliable. This also adds to my narrative why we're not going to have much of a reaction built around this data set today, because traders just really don't know the accuracy of the current level of data. It's going to take them a couple of months to figure this mess out. There's just not going to be any instant solution where things are just going to turn on again. It's going to be a labor of love, so to speak, as we move through the next couple of months trying to interpret the markets.
But this labor of love, how many quarters does it need for it to show that it's going to be effective for the, say, for example, for the Chinese economy?
You know, I'm struggling with a lot of the real negativity in the markets right now. And it's just becoming overburdened, really, as far as I'm concerned. All the constant references to previous bear markets and how the experts say you should be buying stocks. My view here, this slowdown is unlike anything we've seen before. Irrefutably and structurally, it's different than any other bear market on record, simply because the imbalances in the world economy didn't drive this meltdown. It was governments deliberately forcing the markets to shut down that caused this economic tumult. That suggests to me that the pattern of recovery will be nothing like anything before, and it'll probably be a lot more explosive at times, but we still have to, you know, guard our optimism in the sense that there's going to be numerous economic air pockets as the data comes out that we'll have to anticipate. So we're going to have a recovery, whether it's a V-shape, whether it's a W-shape. I don't know what it's going to be. My crystal ball is still pretty foggy, picking out alphabets out of a hat right now. But we're going to have a recovery, and it's going to be a strong recovery, but there's going to be a lot of bumps on the way.
And what you mentioned earlier, the lockdowns around the world, we know that governments around the world have announced multiple fiscal policy, injections into their own economy. Is this a matter of people having money but not being able to spend them as well right now?
You know, it's always a concern that the actual policy transmission is not making it into the hands of the people that need it the most. That's just a constant inefficiency within the capitalist system that we're dealing with, and even to a degree with the Chinese system. There's just not a good mechanism other than just sending a check to people's banks. I don't know why they just don't do that for everybody who's got an account, or people that don't use banks. So I'll just give them a check and let them go cash it. You know, it's a simple process, but it's arduous. The other problem that we're going to discover here, my view is going forward is just the absolute devastation to small businesses. I think this will be very noticeable, even in Malaysia, and even here in Bangkok, as we start to move out of the relative MCOs, that maybe some of the businesses that we used to shop in won't be in existence anymore. It's a sad thing. We're trying to keep these businesses alive by doing business outside of the normal course of operation, and I really hope that a lot of people are doing this sort of thing by supporting the shops, maybe not going to shops, but still doing business by having taxis deliver the products and the goods to their homes that they really need. So fingers crossed this is going to be sufficient, compounded by the government delivering some type of support to the SMEs, and this will buttress the economy as we move out of our government-enforced hibernation processes.
Let's talk about this, moving out of this government-enforced hibernation process. We know that the U.S. Or President Trump has announced a three-phase opening process for the U.S., and we know that some countries in Europe are taking the same similar steps to open their economy bit by bit. What about in Asia? Do you see that happening soon? I think there is still there's still a debate as to when do we open the economy, how safe is it to open the economy, what kind of steps or measures do we take before we open the economy. It's going to be a long process. Do you believe that?
I think it's going to be, I think it needs to be a quantified process, and I think it also has to come with a number of serious safeguards that we have proper tracking measures in place. Fortunately, in Asia, we do have those measures in place because we're ahead of the curve when it comes to that. We have applications that can actually track people, so that's a good thing. But let's just get it back to the quantified metrics here. If we're looking at New York, for an example, they had a slowdown last week in the number of case counts down to 3%, but it ended up mushroomed back up to 5%. So what does this mean? Well, if we use European data as an example right now, looking at Austria, in Switzerland, for example, they only started to open up once the curve flattened for a significant period of time, which was 2 weeks below 2%. That sounds reasonable to me. So in other words, if we can transpose those quantifiable metrics over to Asia, where we see a decline in case counts below 2% on a daily basis for an extended period of time, whether that's 2 weeks, whether that's 3 weeks, I don't really care. Then it's time to open up. In the meantime, I think the governments are doing the correct thing by telling people simply to stay at home. Look, they're not asking you to sign up for war here. They're just telling you to stay at home. So it's a very simple process to flatten the curve, and that's how the curve is going to get flattened. But deferring back to the metrics, I think something below 2% for an extended period of time suggests that it's time to open up the economies again.
And a fashion magazine, Stephen, a fashion magazine reported that the Hermes in Guangzhou flagship takes in $2.7 million in one Saturday, the first day it was open. Do you think there's a lot of pent-up demand across by consumers once this economy or this lockdown is bit by bit?
Absolutely. You know the propensity of Asian consumers and even expats that live in Asia right now. As soon as we get a deal, we're all over it. And I think this is what we're going to see happen, first of all, in Asia as consumers come back out. Look, they're going to be a little bit slow. We know that. We can't really look at the measure over a couple of weeks and say, oh, you know, things are not looking good on the demand side. Well, naturally, they're not looking good on the demand side right out of the gates because people are hesitant to go back because they're worried about secondary spread. As we move forward into subsequent 2, 3, 4 week intervals and the incidence remains low, people are going to start spending. We're going to see the big ticket items go flying off the shelves. Well, I don't think we'll see cars go flying off the shelves. We'll see cars go flying off the lots. And I pretty much anticipate this to happen throughout Asia. This will really be the key signal that the economic lights are turning back on.
Let's look at the other assets as well, the treasury bond and also dollars. They have also registered an increase earlier this morning. What do you make of that? I think we see increase in equity and also increase in US dollar and also bond. Investors still undecided as to whether things will be better moving forward. What do you make of that?
You know, it's just a very mixed and confusing landscape to navigate. Obviously, bonds are still in favor because people want that ultimate hedge in case, you know, we have these economic up and downs, which we're going to have. So this is why bonds are still being safe, being held, especially the longer dates. People seem to be really attracted to that 30-year date for some unknown reason all of a sudden, but that's the way it is. And probably because it has an interest rate bearing coupon on it. And the projection here is interest rates are going to remain lower for a long, long time, years ahead. But Looking at the stock market and the dollars, it's pretty interesting here. We're looking at seeing some U.S. exceptionalism coming back to the markets right now through the NASDAQ, particularly stocks like Netflix, Amazon, and what have you. They're picking up a lot of media influences right now. We compare that with the stocks in emerging market currencies, which seem to be flatlining. We look at Asia ex-Japan right now, the MSCI index seems to be quite flat. This suggests to me that perhaps U.S. exceptionalism will come back to the fore. So that trade that we're all looking at here, the China reflation trade that's going to really spur a lot of demand in Asia, therefore spur a lot of demand in the currencies, might get held back a little bit initially because the U.S. exceptionalism trade, looking at the key stock markets right now, which will probably drive a lot of equity inflows, still suggests that the dollar could remain on the front foot a little bit longer than we think.
Will all prices enjoy an increase following this announcement by many countries around the world to slowly reopen its economies?
I think oil prices will necessarily have to recenter as economies reopen because that's just a sign of a demand coming back. However, looking at the just the imbalances we have in oil markets, it's going to be a gradual uptick in oil prices over the next several months just because of that deluge of supplies that are still on the market, not to mention trying to use what's currently in storage right now. However, I think one of the good aspects about the OPEC production cut deal is the duration. In other words, they're committed to taking barrels out of the market over a longer period of time. This is just not a two-month fix. This is a fix over an extended period. So once the demand side starts to come back to the markets, hopefully that balancing act will provide enough pull to push oil prices higher. This will help all the takers of oil prices, such as Malaysia, Singapore, Calgary, Houston, you name it around the world, that are desperately in need of higher oil prices to bring some sort of stability back to both the currencies and the markets.
And lastly, let's look at a ringgit briefly before we end this interview. What do you make of the ringgit? You said the ringgit should trade on much firmer footing today as prices stabilize and global resentiment bubbles on the favourable prospect as the US economy is set to reboot post-COVID-19. How long can this sentiment last? It's a Friday. Will it last until next Monday?
Yeah, I think provided we get some sort of stability in oil markets, that'll be the first time, higher oil prices are a natural stabilizer for the Malaysian ringgit because it simply provides more petrodollars per barrel to bolster the government's coffers. But I think we're really looking towards China here as a reflationary trade. I think this is probably key, that we could probably see some export data coming in coming months start to pick up as China comes back on again. Okay. And I think ultimately this should play out positive for the ringgit against its regional peers. I'm still a little bit mixed sentiment how it's going to play out against the U.S. dollar,
okay,
diverting back to the U.S. exceptionalism trade.
Thank you very much, Stephen Innes. Stephen Innes bersama kita dari Bangkok. Enjoy your weekend, Stephen. Stephen Innes, Ketua Pagar Strategi Pasaran Global di Exit Trade di Bangkok, memberikan pandangan berkenaan dengan sentimen di pasaran Asia dan juga susulan daripada laporan pelbagai berita berkenaan dengan pembukaan ekonomi di beberapa negara secara perlahan. Kita akan teruskan ikuti perkembangan tersebut di Astro Awani. Saya Rizal Zulkapli. Ini Niaga Awani. Salam hormat.